This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In the 1850s, California newspapers dismissed Chinese immigrants, writing that they had most of the vices and few of the virtues of the African. In that state, before 1940, not only did Asian Americans earn less than whites, they also learned less than African Americans. That changed in just a few generations.
Do we have Asian privilege in America? Because the truth is that Asian American households earn far more money than anyone else. So the question becomes, why? And the answer is found in stable homes and an emphasis on education.
That's Fox News host Bill O'Reilly adding his spin on why Asian Americans now out-earn all other racial minority groups in America. Nate Hilger, an economist at Brown University, has a different take. The nation became less racist towards Asian Americans. And Nate, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Asian Americans were considered at the bottom of the barrel in late 19th into the early 20th century. When did that shift?
It's hard to know exactly when it shifted. After World War II, between 1940 and 1970, 1980, it seems like there was some kind of, sea change in attitudes and laws towards Asian Americans. And I should emphasize that my paper is focused entirely on California. I do not think it's particularly illuminating to compare Asian Americans and other races throughout the country, because Asians have a very distinct geographic legacy. They largely arrived in California, and they largely stayed in California until well into the later half of the 20th century. So in California, starting in, after World War II, there were a lot of state and federal Supreme Court cases and ballot propositions and patterns in interracial marriage that all suggest after around 1940, white society became more tolerant and accepting of Asians and allowed them to be compensated for the skills that they brought to the labor market.
Well, another thing that's often brought up is this idea of the model minority, which we heard reflected from Bill O'Reilly, that education being a priority above all else, strong family values. What did you find in your research as far as that model minority goes?
Yeah, well, I found that Asians do exhibit, some of the Asian advantage in terms of low-income parents investing more in education than you would predict based on their low income. Some of that is an artifact of just Asians living in California historically. California had an unusually egalitarian and high quality education system. And the vast majority of Asians were fortunate enough to live in this state. I also found that after 1940, Asians do start to exhibit an educational advantage. Lower income Asians do invest a bit more in education than both blacks and whites in California, among families that have children in California. And that did contribute somewhat to Asians' unusual upward economic mobility. But the more important factor was that Asians started to be compensated for the skills that they already had in the early 20th century. In the early 20th century, Asians had higher education than blacks, and they had high skill levels measured by World War II Army enlistment tests. But they were still massively underpaid. They were paid like blacks, despite their very different skill levels from blacks, which is a function of, their very different history from blacks in the United States. And after 1940, Asians started to be paid for these high skill levels. And even if Asians hadn't invested in education in a very different way from blacks and whites in California, they would have wound up converging in their incomes to whites. So I think that's a very different sort of view of Asian American economic upward mobility.
Yeah, I want to get to that, the difference in African American pay and progress. But first, to this idea of the compensation becoming equal, which reflects a difference in racial attitudes. Now, it's difficult to measure racial attitudes. So how did you find that? How did you source that for evidence of changing attitudes?
Yeah, so that is very interesting. I actually, in my paper, I don't have good data on prejudice changing over the 20th century. I think after the 1940s and 50s, it becomes harder to measure prejudice because, at least directly from surveys, because you can't just ask people, you know, are you racist against XYZ group? Because people no longer feel comfortable answering these questions. However, in the early 20th century, people did feel much more comfortable answering these types of questions. And it turned out that there was a large literature in social psychology which asked, you know, thousands of people all across the United States and some in Canada how they felt about Japanese Americans and Chinese Americans and African Americans and Swedish and, you know, Mexican Americans. And they asked people to give their willingness to become socially close with or their preference to spend, you know, time with all these different ethnic groups. And I gathered 23 different samples from 10 different studies published in the 1920s and 30s. And what you find is that all of these studies, when they ask people these questions about their racial preferences and racial prejudices, they find that African Americans, Chinese Americans, and Japanese Americans wind up near the bottom of the list in sample after sample. And for the two samples that I had on the West Coast, Japanese and Chinese Americans do even worse than African Americans. So this is sort of one piece of the paper showing that prejudice against Asian Americans as measured from direct survey data looks very strong in the early 20th century. I don't trust survey data like that after World War II. What you see after World War II is you see laws changing. You see voters. There was a ballot proposition in 1946 to strengthen anti-alien land laws. And whereas a similar ballot proposition had received overwhelming electoral support in California, which is, you know, and this ballot proposition can be interpreted as, you know, an expression of animosity towards Japanese Americans. And a similar ballot proposition in 1920 received 75% of the vote, whereas in 1946 it failed and it only received you know, well under 50% of the vote. So I can't look at survey data changing over time on racial preferences, but I can show you that prejudice against Asian Americans and blacks was very intense in the early 20th century, and that through other measures, this prejudice appears to have declined between 1940 and 1970.
Nate Hilger is with us. He's an economist at Brown University and author of a study about Asian American upward mobility. It's the only non-white U.S. racial group to experience long-term institutional discrimination, yet today exhibits really high income, more than other minorities, and also white people of the same educational level. Why, then, do you think that Asian Americans have been able to close the wage gap while African Americans have historically not?
Okay, so this is a bit of a misperception of my paper, I think. I don't show that racism against Asians stopped and racism against blacks continued. That's not what my paper shows. I think there are many reasons to think that the labor market became more open to, you know, minorities. Some of the more, you know, institutional forms of discrimination in laws and, you know, monolithic customs kind of declined in the decades after World War II, and I discussed that in more detail in the paper. The reason why I think this more open environment allowed Asians to pull ahead faster than blacks, as well as Native Americans, and also Mexican Americans, is because of Asian Americans' different historical legacy in the U.S. America expressed its racial hostility towards Asians by refusing to allow the vast majority of Asians into the country, and by refusing to allow many Asians to bring their spouses over from China and Japan and start families in the U.S. And these laws had a very pro-skill bias. They only allowed Asians to come and start families in the U.S. if they were merchants, which required you to have wealth and literacy and numeracy. And only a tiny fraction of Asian Americans in the early 20th century started families in the U.S. And the Asian Americans who did start families tended to have much higher skills than the Asians who did not start families. And all of this has led to Asian Americans having, you know, as of 1940, even at that early stage for cohorts born in the 1920s, Asians exhibit very high levels of skill in achievement, you know, academic achievement tests. And I think that reflects, you know, in contrast, in extreme, you know, radical contrast, African Americans and Native Americans, they were forced to come to the U.S., you know, and they were or to join the U.S. nationality, and then they were excluded from the education system for generation after generation. And I think this had an adverse effect on the ability of these groups to accumulate literacy and numeracy and educational skills. And I think after 1940, when the labor market became more open in California, blacks still had an underlying problem of this legacy of educational discrimination. They couldn't just go into the labor market and say, okay, now that you're willing to hire minority engineers and minority doctors and minority managers, you're still not necessarily going to hire us because of this historical legacy. Whereas Asian Americans, because of their historical legacy, which favored higher skills, could, you know, start applying for jobs as managers and engineers and doctors and lawyers. And that was a faster transition as a result of their very different historical legacy.
Now, you did your research in California, and there are many people of Asian American descent working in Silicon Valley and doing amazing work, as there are in other high-level positions, both in California and across the nation. How did this softening of discrimination against Asian Americans enable that to happen today?
Well, what we see in the 1940s is already Asian Americans had high skills, and yet they still had low earnings. And I think that's a key part of the paper, is showing that most likely, the by far most common sense clear explanation of that is that Asians were not allowed to make their full contribution, but the struggle for equal rights and equal opportunity of both blacks and Asian Americans, and the changes in attitudes of whites altogether led to, you know, the kind of shift that allowed more minorities to make their full contribution. And I think Silicon Valley would be a much less productive, less rich place without the contributions of Asian Americans and other minorities and immigrants who have historically experienced such high levels of discrimination that, you know, previously they would not have been able to make these contributions. So I think this, you know, Silicon Valley is partly reflecting dividends of America's greater tolerance to allowing minorities to, you know, be equals and make full contributions as productive entrepreneurs and workers and colleagues.
Nate, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Nate Hilger, he's an economist at Brown University and author of Upward Mobility and Discrimination, The Case of Asian Americans. And you'll find a link to the write-up on his study, Upward Mobility and Discrimination, at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.